Brendan Morrison, our weekly regular, we don't know where he is in the world, but this is one of the great elements of bringing you on, Mo, is we try to find out where you are. Usually you're in Canada. I would assume you are in our country. I don't know what province. I don't know what city. I don't even know if you're in the wilderness today. Where are you?
It's kind of like Where's Waldo, right?
Yeah. I think we should maybe we can get a sponsor on board, Mo, and people can guess, and whoever is geographically closest to where you are wins a prize each week.
Yeah, absolutely. That would be interesting for sure. Back here in Calgary. I don't know if it was in Vancouver or the Mission area last couple of days, filming our final episode of Real West Coast this year. 10th episode. Did a sturgeon show out there, and it was awesome. It was phenomenal. Great fishing.
Beautiful, man. For those who have not gone sturgeon fishing, it is something completely different than probably any other type of fishing you've done, correct?
You know what? If you enjoy fishing, or even if you want to try fishing, go sturgeon fishing. Do yourself a favor. It is hard to describe. I mean, I've done it several times, and every time I go out, it's like I'm a little kid on Christmas, just anticipation, waiting for that bite. And I don't know of any fish that pulls like these sturgeon. I mean, they're absolutely incredible. You know, maybe a large tuna or a huge marlin, but other than that, I really don't know. They're spectacular fish.
And for those who don't know and can't envision what a sturgeon is, I mean, this is all catch and release. These are like prehistoric creatures we're talking about, and you cannot believe the size of some of these fish and how many people it takes to pick the fish up and get the photo with the fish if that's what you're doing.
Yeah, like, you know, to live or to have this kind of resource in the backyard of the Lower Mainland, essentially in a metropolis city like Vancouver, I mean, it's unheard of. You know, these are the largest freshwater fish in North America, second largest in the world, I believe, only to the beluga sturgeon in Russia. But it's incredible. I mean, you know, sometimes these fish come up and roll. I couldn't even imagine if somebody didn't know these fish were in there and they're walking along the dike or, you know, happened to be in the river and they saw that thing come out. They would think shark right away. But, yeah, they're dinosaurs and, you know, they're protected. They've been protected since, I believe, the early 90s and there's a lot of research and study that go into, trying to figure out numbers and a tagging program. We did a bunch of tagging here the past couple of days, and a lot of fish we caught were previously caught and had been tagged, so you can kind of monitor and document where those fish have previously been caught and how much they've grown since the last capture. But we also caught some fish that had never been tagged before, so that was exciting to tag some virgin fish, if you will.
I've only been once, but it's so random because there are the sturgeon that like one person can take care of and it comes out and it's like the size, maybe not the look, but it's the size of a normal fish that you would pull out of the river. And then there are these ones that are these beasts that you had no idea existed. And your mind is blown when you see this fish on a hook and how many people it takes.
I mean, these things, I mean, to put in perspective, and a 3 or a 4 foot fish is small. When you start talking about feet and fish and that being small, I mean, you just shake your head. But there's fish 11, 12 feet in there, over 1,000 pounds. Last couple of days, we got 9, 7, 8, 5, 7, 7, 6, 9. Like, I mean, are you kidding me? It's crazy.
This might be asking you to pick your favorite kid, but where's your favorite place in the world to fish if you had to go to one?
Man, you're painting me in a corner here. That's a tough one. I've probably fished salmon more than any other species. But if I had to pick one place, like my last day of fishing in the world, it probably would be fly fishing for tarpon, like sight fishing for tarpon and having them come and eat a dry fly on the surface, a big, huge tarpon, 100 to 200 pounds that turns on your fly and comes and inhales it is exhilarating. Like, I know I don't want to offend anybody by saying, why you aren't picking a fish from BC? I love BC. Even in Alberta, there's great fishing here as well, but tarpon on the fly to me is the ultimate.
Okay, so that's the favorite thing you've experienced or where you would go, but where is the bucket list for Real West Coast? If there's a place that you have not been and I could grant you your wish to go there and fish today, where would it be?
You know what? I've been doing a lot of homework there's one place down in Panama called Tropic Star Lodge, which is a place I've been wanting to get to for a few years. Big game fishing, a lot of tuna, rooster fish. Like they have a variety of different species. You know, that, I would say that would be kind of near the top of the list right now.
Excellent. All right, you've got plans. We all have to make them. We don't know when we're going to be able to carry them out. We all got to make them. Brendan Morrison joining us as he does every single Thursday. It's been a tough week in the sporting world and specifically in the hockey world when it comes to Joey Moss. I know you never played in Edmonton, Brendan, but I don't know if you had any experiences or just short stories you wanted to share about Joey Moss and the impact he had on not just the city of Edmonton, but the hockey community at large.
Yeah, well, yeah, I didn't have too many direct interactions with Joey, but you know, Joey was a staple in the locker room. Every time, you know, a team, an NHL team would come to Vancouver, and all the teams that I played on, he was around. And he would mostly work in the home room, but sometimes he'd come over to the visitor room if he had to grab something or deliver something to the trainers. You know, just always had a big smile on his face. Good energy, right? Good energy to be around. You know, and everything you hear about him, just his passion for, you know, being a part of the Oilers organization and even the Eskimos, but just being in that environment and just absolutely loving going to work every day and interacting with the guys and being a big part of, you know, that culture there is, you know, just him standing beside the, like in between the benches, belting out the national anthem. I mean, those are things that I'll remember about Joey. Again, I don't know him personally, but just, you know, puts a smile on your face.
Yeah, and it was one of two big stories in the hockey world about inclusivity this week, and that was the positive one. Not that Joey passed away, obviously, but his life and his legacy. And then the negative one was everything to do with this recent draft pick of the Arizona Coyotes and what happens next and everything that went into the racial taunts and picking on someone, bullying someone with developmental disabilities. And Brendan, I'm wondering when you were coming up, not that you ever engaged in any activity like that, but how aware were you when you were a teenager and you were going through hockey that things that you were doing 12 years old, 13 years old, 14 year old, they could have a major impact on your life moving forward?
Yeah, I mean, it's a different world. I mean, it truly is. It's, you know, it's not really comparing apples to apples on one hand, but on the other hand, it is. I mean, treating people a certain way is, to me, is common sense. I mean, it's not difficult really to distinguish what is the right way and what is the wrong way to treat somebody. I mean, that's never been an issue. And as far as, you know, that line, but, you know, as far as younger kids, you know, 12, 13 years old, I don't know if they understand the repercussions of thinking in their mind that they're maybe joking around and having the time and not truly understanding, you know, how they're offending somebody. So that's a big part of the problem, I think, is not them fully understanding the magnitude of what they're doing in the moment. I mean, I didn't see the video or of what happened with this prospect. I saw a quick article on it, but, yeah, I mean, it's tough to digest, right? I mean, we're living in a different world today than we were 5 years ago, 10 years ago, 15 years ago when we were kids. It's constantly evolving and you have to evolve with it. And I mean, it's like I said, a lot of this can be solved by just plain common sense and just really how your values at home and how you're raised.
No question. And that was where I was going to go next, because it's one thing to read it as an individual and say, wow, man, I never engaged in anything like that. You know, I may have done things when I was a teenager that I would do differently, but nothing like that. And I don't think anyone would condone the behavior. Nobody does. But reading that as a parent, Brendan, man, I can't even imagine what that would be like as a parent of a child that did something like that. Can you?
Well, I think you'd be sick to the stomach, really. I mean, it's, you know, a lot of embarrassment, I think. Absolutely. A lot of anger, a lot of different emotions, for sure. And again, I don't know anything about the personal situation there and his home life and et cetera. But yeah, I can't imagine. I can't even imagine, you know, what they're going through.
Did you talk to your kids about it?
You know, I just got home late last night, but we will be having a conversation for sure. We, you know, we like to have reminders fairly frequently about social media and understanding that a lot of things that you guys put on there is out there for the rest of your life. And, you know, you might not think at this point in time in your life it could affect you. But down the road, if you're, whatever you're doing in life, whether you're trying to become an athlete or you're trying to get into the workforce, I mean, this is what companies and people do now. They go and look at your social media account. They go through it with a fine-tooth comb. Okay, what is this person like? You know, what are the comments? What kind of things are they doing? Who do they hang around? So, I mean, it's real. I mean, it's reality, and you have to be aware of it.
Well, and he's off to University of North Dakota, and the Coyotes in North Dakota have taken a similar approach with the statements they've issued saying, look, we were aware of this, and we are going to use our institutions and organizations as a way to better develop a person and to lead by example with reform here. Put yourself in a coach's shoes. You might have known about this because a player sent out a letter saying, hey, this was an incident from my past, but we've moved on from it. When allegations like this come out, and one of them includes from the family of the victim, listen, this young man never even apologized to my kid. What do you do as a coach at that point? How do you address that?
Yeah, I mean, well, I don't know, again, the situation with Phoenix, and maybe they finally addressed it and had a conversation, and maybe there was remorse, I don't know, and maybe they felt that was good enough and he was going to move on and get help, the help that he needs. But yeah, they're not issuing an apology. I mean, I'm not 100% sure of the facts, but if that's the case, I mean, that's a tough one.
Brandon Morrison joining us here this morning, as he does every single Thursday on the Scott Rentoul Show. Complete departure from that. I want to ask your opinion on coaching. Travis Green looking for a contract extension right now. It's a tough time to be asking for money, but this is the world of professional sports, and that's the way it happens. He's going into the final year of his deal. As a player in the National Hockey League, when did you know, or what did you want to see from a coach to believe, yep, this is the guy we need moving forward with? We are all going to get better around this person.
Yeah, I think communication, you know, back and forth, knowing exactly where you stand on things, not having any gray area, but being able to talk like a man and have a conversation. Hey, if things aren't going well, if you don't like what I'm doing, tell me. Don't let me sit here and stew and guess, and I can be better in certain areas. Let's have a conversation. I think that's a big part of not only sports today, but again, just the younger generation. I mean, they want constant feedback, right? Whether it's good or bad, and sometimes you might not want to hear the bad stuff, but I think as you mature, you appreciate it, right? You understand exactly where things sit. From afar, I think Travis Green has done a fantastic job there. I've heard nothing but great things about him from people in the organization. I think he deserves to get paid. I mean, he's done a good job since he's been there. I mean, he's been, you know, when he first came in, a bit patient with the group, and they weren't a very good team, and now they're kind of evolving into a dangerous team, and I think he deserves a lot of that credit.
Yeah, I agree with that wholeheartedly, and as I mentioned, it's a tough time to ask for money, but that's the reality of the business we're talking about. When you became a free agent, how important was the coach to you? I mean, players talk. You know a little bit about what a room's going to feel like. I know you wanted to be put in certain positions on the ice, but as far as the approach of the coach, how much did that matter?
Yeah, it factors in, I think, for sure. But on the other hand, I mean, it can't be the deciding factor, I don't think, because as we all know in this game, there's not a lot of job security, so that can change in an instant. But, you know, I do believe having a good relationship with a coach and definitely helps and enhances a player's decision, you know, to play for him. There's no question. You know, I think guys look for certain things as a player, they look for certain things in a coach and respect guys for how they carry themselves and how they treat the players. It's definitely something that factors in.
You played for an absolute legend at the University of Michigan. Was there an NHL coach that you always wanted to play for but never got an opportunity?
Geez, you know, it's That's a good one. I played for a variety of coaches over my years, you know, early in my career for Jacques Lemaire, who was, you know, an absolute mastermind behind the bench with X's and O's, and just how he read the game and his feel for the game. I mean, he was, the details were, you know, something that I didn't really experience from anybody else, but, you know, poor communicator. That was just his style. He walk right past you in the hall and wouldn't even look at you. So, I mean, that's just the way it was back then. But, you know, I mean, there's a lot of good coaches. I don't know if there's one guy particularly, but that really stands out. I was fortunate in college to play for Red. You know, he even though we're young kids in college, essentially, he treated us like we were men and you know, held us to high standards and expectations. And, you know, at times you might have thought they were difficult, but when you look back on it, you know, I wouldn't say dissimilar to Lou Lamoriello, but when you look back on it, you really appreciate, you know, the standards that he upholds and makes you a better person.
So with everything that happened with Kevin Cash pulling Blake Snell out of that game the other night, we put a question out to our listeners yesterday. Hey, name a coaching decision that your team made that you will never get over. And one of the ones that came up from Canadian hockey fans, this won't surprise you, Mark Crawford leaving Wayne Gretzky on the bench in 1998 during the shootout in Nagano. Did you ever broach that subject with Crow? You played for him for a lot of years. In a private moment, did you ever say, hey, Crow, what the hell?
You know, I think it came up one time after, like, not right in the moment when we played for him. I think a couple of years passed. But I think it was, I can't recall the exact conversation, but, you know, he tried to defend himself by just saying, listen, Wayne didn't have a great track record on breakaways, and we thought there was other guys that were better. But, I mean, Jesus, take a lot of heat for that one. No question.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, you take a lot of heat for that. And that's one that people will just never get past. And, like, I saw yesterday, the president of the St. Louis Cardinals came out and he kind of got ahead of it with Randy Arozarena, who was fabulous in the playoffs, and the Cardinals traded away and he's become this instant star this season for the Tampa Bay Rays. And he said, yeah, man, I got to own that. We made a mistake and I got to make sure we don't make mistakes like that in the future. I wonder if Crow should have just gone down that road. Yeah, you know what? I mean, it's,
you know,
been years,
like that.
I should have shot Gretzky.
I like that approach, man. I think that's, like you said, owning it. And you know what? Like, hey, there's some guys that when they're in certain situations on certain teams, they just, for whatever reason, it just doesn't happen. And you go to a new situation. Sometimes you can't explain it, but all of a sudden things just take off. And of course, everyone looks, you know, hindsight's a beautiful thing. You look back, well, why didn't this happen here? Well, who knows if it ever would have happened? You don't know. But it's easy to point the finger and say it was going to happen.
Oh, yeah. And that's what sports and sports fandom is all about. I don't know if this ever is something that stuck with you as a player or maybe as a fan before that. Is there something that a coach did either on a team you were on that you couldn't believe and you went, how is this happening? Or maybe as a fan that you watched and said, I'll never get past that. I'll always think that the wrong thing happened.
Yeah, you know, I know the baseball World Series there, the Dodgers and Tampa Bay. You know, that's a tough one, but I mean, how did you talk to or you read and you, why was Tampa Bay so successful? Purely analytics is what they're saying. And this was an analytical move by them and it backfired. You know, so sometimes you do just have to trust your gut, which is, you know, it's, I don't know. I think about, you know, maybe one time when I was in Washington, you know, we'd won the President's Trophy. We had the best record in the league in 2009, 2010. And we lost in Game 7 to Montreal. That's when Jurison Halak played out of his mind. But, you know, Jose Theodore was our starter that entire year. And Varlamov was our backup. And I think at one point Theodore went something ridiculous, like 24 games without losing in regulation. Like, it was stupid. And, you know, he got pulled, I think, in Game 2. And we went with Barley. And not pointing this, that's not why we lost. We completely dominated and you know, played Montreal for the most part. We couldn't score. But I was a little surprised that everyone went back to Theo in that series at some point, you know, since he was the guy that kind of carried us the whole season.
You're not one to hold grudges. I'm not surprised.
No. But it would always be a question.
Of course. Hey, Mo, I always appreciate the time and the conversation, buddy. I'm not sure where we'll find you next week, but we'll find you. Don't worry about that. Thank you again for your time.
Hey, bud, no problem. We'll chat soon.